Good afternoon, guys, and hope you're all well. And today I wanted to talk about the IMF view on the situation in South Africa. As you, many of you know already, the IMF could actually intervene in the situation here in South Africa and bail out the government. So, as you know, I'm an avid reader of R.W. Johnson books, and there is actually a chapter 8 actually, which described the view from the IMF on the country. So basically it says that the IMF conduct annual country consultation under its Article 4, and in 2012 the visiting IMF delegation expressed considerable shock at Pretoria's priorities. To be sure, a recession required Keynesian counter-cyclical public expenditure, but this should have been on infrastructure in order to mop up some of the mountainous unemployment and to make the country more competitive, ready for the upturn. Instead, the ANC government had borrowed massively abroad merely in order to give the money away to already overpaid public sector workers. As a result, the IMF warned public spending needed to be completely rebalanced. The IMF could hardly contain its horror at the government's complete disregard for the unemployed. Raising real public sector wages during the peak of the recession contributed to one of the largest job-shedding experiences amongst emerging markets during the global financial crisis. The fact that the IMF now is more concerned for South Africa's unemployed than does its own government is no small measure of the ANC's journey since 1994. Even though it's expressed in a diplomatic understatement, the IMF could not disguise its alarm. It urged the authorities to bring back the public sector wage bill to pre-crisis levels and cautioned that further slippage could erode the government's credibility at a delicate global juncture when rating agencies are questioning its ability to rein in spending. The IMF warned that public sector pay did not need just to be stabilized, but to be lowered. It pointed out how the government wage bill in South Africa compared to its middle-income peers, Chile, Colombia, Russia, Israel, Poland, Thailand, Hungary, the Slovak Republic, Romania and Turkey. As a share of the GDP, 14%, it was the highest of the entire group and more than twice as high as Chile, 6%. As a share of fiscal revenue, it was at nearly 40%, by far the highest in the group and nearly twice the level of the Slovak Republic, 21%. As a share of government spending, it was the second highest at 38%, over twice as high as the Slovak Republic, 18%. As a share of the workforce, 22%, it was by far the highest and four times as much as Colombia. The IMF clearly was shocked by what it saw, and it warned that the government was paying nothing like sufficient attention to the problem of mass unemployment, which, it warned, was politically and socially unsustainable, and added that the government is finding it difficult to bring the public sector wage bill under control. Controlling the public sector wage bill now represents an important test of the government's political resolve and strength. It is indeed as if public sector workers existed on another planet. In 2000, their wages were on average 12% higher than private sector wages. By 2010, their wages were 43.6% higher on average. The only way for South Africa to avoid the IMF intervention would be for the government to preempt such an eventuality by carrying out IMF-style policies itself. That was exactly what Thabo Mbeki had done under the Mandela government in 1996. The policy worked, but Mbeki was never forgiven for it. So everything suggests that the slide will continue, ending with a further downgrading by the credit agencies. Should South African bonds descend to junk bond status, the effects will be dramatic. International demand for South African bonds was strongly increased by the country's inclusion into Citibank's benchmark World Government Bond Index in 2012. This led to an upward rebalancing of portfolios to bring them in line with South Africa's 0.44% index weighting. As a result, net foreign purchases of its government bonds more than doubled in 2012. 93.8 billion rand against 42 billion rand in 2011. Further downgrading would, however, remove South Africa from that index, with big results. Moreover, all manner of international pension and insurance funds are forbidden by law to trade in junk bonds, as are most tracker funds. The result would not only be a sharp rise in the cost of debt, but in absolute terms, it might be difficult to fund the debt at all. The last stage of decay is where the markets simply refuse to accept one's paper. Should the situation continue, and indeed it is at this stage in 2019, and it's just a matter of time before the government finds it impossible to fund either or both the fiscal and current account deficits, this would push the country into a debt trip from which it probably could not escape without IMF assistance. True, it might soldier on for a while on its own, but this would not be viable for long. The multiple weaknesses of the post-liberation state, together with the general nervousness the ANC inspires in both domestic and foreign investors, more or less guarantee that. Yet, for the ANC government to go cap in hand to the IMF asking for a bailout would, in effect, signal the final failure of ANC governance, the fight that Thabo Mbeki always feared. For the IMF would, of course, demand conditions for its support. The government would lose control of economic policy and inevitably part of the deal would be huge spending cuts, certainly in the public service payable
and perhaps also in social grounds. In addition, there would inevitably have to be a liberalization of the labor market, which would give the coup de grace to Cusatu and thus the SACP and much more besides. So guys, that's it for me at this stage today. Hope you have a good Sunday and speak to you soon. Cheers, bye.